One-and-done screening is not an effective due diligence screening strategy. The level of due diligence has to vary depending on the risk. Given the nature of the transaction, the parties involved, and the history of the transactions, if any, due diligence screening is just the first step. The more information you learn, the more likely to uncover a real red flag. That does not mean that due diligence should be a boil the ocean exercise. Rather, it should be a focused and intelligent process keyed to levels of risk.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Well, hello, everyone. Michael Volkoff here. An interesting topic today, one that I think people need to pay more attention to, is third-party risks and sanctions compliance. With this new era of the new FCPA, as coined by DOJ's Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco, we now need to focus on third-party risk and sanctions enforcement. The law, the practice, and the risks are important and not just the same as FCPA legal requirements. And as we embark on this new criminal enforcement era surrounding sanctions violations, companies have to address this issue and do it correctly. Now, guidance is available on the management of third-party sanctions risks. It derives, stems from the same sources as like any other issue, from regulatory guidance and enforcement actions, most of which have been generated by OFAC civil enforcement actions. And DOJ's sanctions enforcement against companies is relatively limited, and there has not been the same level of guidance, but rest assured, DOJ is poised to begin their aggressive sanctions and enforcement actions. However, DOJ has participated in several important joint compliance notices issued by DOJ, OFAC, and the Bureau of Industry and Security. So let's begin with some easy divisions. A company has to begin the process like any other risk, and that is conducting a risk assessment. OFAC's guidance, a framework for OFAC compliance commitments, is a document that provides excellent guidance on all facets of an effective sanctions compliance program. To address a company's risks, it is good to divide operations into two categories: the distribution side of the business and the supply chain for production purposes. Both need to be defined. On the distribution side, this usually consists of distributors, agents, resellers, dealers, and ultimately the customer. And on the supply side, it requires defining layers of vendors and suppliers, and to the extent possible, all the way to sourcing of materials and goods used to produce items for sale. These tasks, especially on the supply side, are easier said than done. Sanctions enforcement can extend to supply chain sourcing, and we'll talk about that, and transactions in the supply chain that companies may not be, quote, aware of or privy to in a legal sense. This is a new, or in privity with, this is a new and challenging area for companies seeking to implement appropriate due diligence and onboarding controls. Now, we will break this down, and I'm going to go first through the distribution side, then the supply side, and then we'll sort of try to put everything together into a good list. So companies rely on the robust distribution chains as an efficient mechanism to enter new markets without requiring a significant investment. In other words, instead of having employees setting up an office and investing in a new area, then you go ahead and you use distributors as a way to enter a market. Sometimes there are parallel sales activities also established because the distributors help the salespeople and vice versa. It's interesting how certain industries have evolved and relied on different models for use of third parties. So sanctions liability, like anti-bribery liability, can occur when a company relies on third parties who then violate sanctions prohibitions. The classic case: Company A sells its product to distributor B, who resells the product to customer C in Iran, a prohibited country. Is Company A always liable for that sale to customer C in Iran? This case, and the most important case on the distribution side, is the case of Epsilon Electronics versus U.S. Department of Treasury. It's a 2017 case, and I would urge you to read it because it answers this important question. In reviewing an OFAC enforcement action, the U.S. Court of Appeals in D.C. affirmed in part and reversed in part OFAC's and the district court's decision affirming OFAC's enforcement action against Epsilon Electronics, a subsidiary of Power Acoustic. The facts of the case are a cautionary tale. OFAC began investigating Epsilon in 2011 when OFAC learned about a 2008 shipment from Epsilon to an address in Tehran, Iran. OFAC issued a warning letter to Epsilon as a result of this investigation. Later in 2011, OFAC learned that Epsilon had received multiple wire transfers from a Dubai bank made on behalf of Asra International. OFAC examined Asra's website, which referenced the company's success in the Iran market. Asra was based in Dubai. They also, on their website, listed dealers located in Iran and displayed photos from trade shows in various Iranian cities. Some of these photos appeared on Epsilon's U.S. website. OFAC initiated an investigation. In May 2012, OFAC sent Epsilon another administrative subpoena requesting further details on the company's transactions with Asra and with Iran. Epsilon produced invoices for 34 transactions with Asra and 5 additional transactions that occurred during February to May 2012. Were destined for Dubai and not Iran. OFAC imposed a penalty of over $4 million. Epsilon claimed it did not have knowledge or reason to know that Asra International distributed Epsilon's products to Iran. In rejecting Epsilon's challenge to OFAC's enforcement action, the Court of Appeals articulated the standard of liability when an exporter distributes its product through a third party. Namely, when an exporter has, quote-unquote, and this is the key phrase, reason to know, close-quote, that goods are specifically intended for re-export to a prohibited customer, in Iran in this case, the exporter is liable. Interestingly, the Court of Appeals specifically held that OFAC need not prove that the goods ultimately ended up in Iran, and instead noted that liability attaches once the exporter acts with the prohibited state of mind. The Court of Appeals explained that an exporter has taken all the steps he must take to put goods in transit to Iran, and the goods are then out of his control. No other actions are required to violate OFAC's regulations barring exports to Iran. The arrival of the goods is a result of his voluntary conduct, not part of the conduct itself, and thus is not a component of the act of exportation. It's the act of exportation with the state of mind. The Court of Appeals further stated that the reason to know standard can be satisfied through a variety of circumstantial evidence, including course of dealing, general knowledge of the industry or customer preferences, working relationships between the parties, or other criteria far too numerous to enumerate. In affirming OFAC's finding that Epsilon had reason to know that the shipments to Asra were destined for an Iran customer, the Court of Appeals cited the fact that Asra distributed exclusively to Iran as late as December 2011. Asra's website referenced its affiliate in Iran, listed only 2 contact locations, one in Dubai and one in Iran, and its website touted its 10 years of experience in Iran, and its website included a list of dealers located in Iran. So that's an interesting case, and the reason to know standard is when you see red flags, you have to resolve those red flags, or each of those red flags can be a predicate for reason to know. Well, let's turn to another case on the distribution side, which is really important in terms of layers of distribution and what kind of mitigation steps may be necessary. Apollo Aviation Group settled with OFAC for $210,600 for violations of the Sudanese sanctions program. Apollo leased 2 aircraft engines to Company One in the UAE, which subleased to Ukrainian airline Company Number 2. Which then installed the engines on an aircraft to Sudan Airways, a prohibited entity at the time. The question was Apollo Aviation liable for that leasing to a prohibited entity by the sub-distributor, Company 2? The lease agreements Apollo entered into with Company 1 contained a provision prohibiting the lessee from maintaining, operating, flying, or transferring the engines to any countries subject to United States or UN sanctions. Notwithstanding this clause, Apollo did not ensure the aircraft engines were utilized in a manner that complied with OFAC's regulations. For example, at the time, Apollo did not obtain U.S. law export compliance certificates from lessees and sublessees. Additionally, Apollo did not periodically monitor or otherwise verify its lessees and sublessees' adherence to the lease provision, requiring compliance with the U.S. sanctions laws. As a result, Apollo learned where its engines had actually flown only after the engines were returned to Apollo at the end of the lease. So, including a contractual provision without any follow-up is not going to be sufficient. And how do you get to the company too, the sublessee requirement? You can impose that on the first sublessee, but you need to extend it and you need to include contract language to require it from any sublessee that the lessee engages. And then you have to verify it. Okay, let's talk about supply chains. Go to the other side. While OFAC's enforcement actions and guidance points to important steps exporters must take when relying on third-party distributors and the reason to know standards, there are issues, though, on the supply side, and the supply chain is a little trickier. OFAC's expectations are not as clearly established, but it is fairly easy to predict where OFAC will land on the issue. The most important case, again, in this area is the 2019 Elf Cosmetics case. On January 31st, 2019, OFAC announced a $996,000 settlement with Elf Cosmetics, a California cosmetics company, for violating the North Korean sanctions regulations. Elf imported 156 shipments of false eyelash kits from two suppliers in China that contained material sourced by these suppliers from North Korea. The total value of the illegal shipments was approximately $4.4 million. Elf's OFAC compliance program was non-existent or inadequate. Elf's violations and failure to act occurred as part of its supply chain risk management. Elf failed to discover that approximately 80% of the false eyelash kits supplied by two of Elf's China-based suppliers contained materials from North Korea, and Elf then self-disclosed the apparent violations. Now, as noted by OFAC, Elf failed to exercise sufficient supply chain due diligence while sourcing products from a region that poses a high risk of connection to North Korea. To remediate, Elf implemented supply chain audits that verify the country of origin, and two, adopted new procedures to require suppliers to sign certificates of compliance. Three, conducted an enhanced supplier audit that included verification of payment information related to production materials and review of supplier bank statements. OFAC recognized that companies need to undertake basic supply chain due diligence when sourcing products from overseas, particularly in regions close to high-risk countries or regions. And in this respect, OFAC expects companies to undertake these audits with country of origin verification, mandatory OFAC training for suppliers, and routinely and frequently performing audits of suppliers. At first glance, OFAC's finding of liability in this case appears to be unfair because Elf did not know that its suppliers were sourcing materials from North Korea. However, in the absence of it conducting supply chain audits or some monitoring activity of some sort, OFAC imposed liability for conduct analogous to really hiding one's head in the sand. Elf made no attempt to uncover possible problems in its supply chain and therefore assumed the risk. Okay, so we now get to seven important ways to mitigate your third-party sanctions risks. We have seven specific ways, and it seems like it's a Herculean task, but it can be done. Turning to third-party risk management, let's put together those essential elements of an effective mitigation program. One, risk assessment and know your third-party population. It is critical to identify and collect information on all your third-party intermediaries on the distribution side and all your vendors and suppliers on the supply side. Your holistic review of third-party risks should include specific geographic locations, relevant products and services, potential government connections and owners, and ultimate beneficial owners for intermediaries, suppliers, vendors, and yes, even customers. Two, integrate the 50% rule. Companies have to incorporate related companies that are owned 50% or more by one or more prohibited party. Remember that, say, 25% owners who are SDNs and total 50% or more ownership in the related company transform the related company into a prohibited SDN. 3, varying levels of due diligence. One-and-done screening is not an effective due diligence screening strategy. The level of due diligence has to vary depending on the risk. Given the nature of the transaction, the parties involved, and the history of the transactions, if any, due diligence screening is just the first step. The more information you learn, the more likely to uncover a real red flag. That does not mean that due diligence should be a boil the ocean exercise. Rather, it should be a focused and intelligent process keyed to levels of risk. 4, end user documentation. Companies have quickly adapted to the new sanctions realities by embracing end user certificates as a critical way in which to mitigate risks. By requiring third parties to provide and or secure such certifications, companies are able to mitigate potential diversion risks and then have a basis by which to defend themselves or to justify a particular transaction. Monitoring and quick-time audits. Effective compliance means keen awareness. This in turn requires monitoring and quick-time audits through regular sampling procedures. Third parties who pose a high risk should be subject to sampling of transactions, documentation, and shipping materials. Regular checks can be incorporated into robust contractual and certification requirements. 6, training and more training. Third-party training has become fairly standard. Such training usually involves code of conduct or possibly anti-corruption. Program needs to include trade compliance, sanctions, dual use, ITAR, and other topics as needed. This is a great way to collect updated certifications after training programs are completed. And finally, 7, red flag identification and sensitivity. Perhaps the most important aspect of managing sanctions compliance risks for third parties is familiarity and experience in identifying red flags for further investigation. Sanctions evaders are sophisticated and can be very cagey. Trade compliance staff has to be well-trained and exercise a keen eye on picking up sanctions red flags, following up on issues, and pursuing concerns even when facing resistance from the third party, the customer, or even your internal business constituency. Well, that's a quick look, and I wanted to make sure that we got through both the supply side and the distribution side. This is just a new and hot area in terms of coming up with appropriate strategies to mitigate your third-party risks in this new sanctions enforcement era. So, thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week with another episode.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkoff, go to volkovlaw.com.